and welcome to episode 35 of season 11 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is J-Dub of Dubsism. Welcome back to the show once again, John.
Well, you're having me back. Friday the 13th, we made Jason references closing out things earlier. Who knows what's going to happen today?
Just make sure you got your bayonet out and ready. You never know what might happen here.
I got my M109 handy. Don't you worry.
Wait, are you going to use your Japanese rifle or...
The M109 wouldn't fit on that, so, you know, what it's attached to is your surprise. What's the old screw around and find out phrase?
Yes, I knew that. I knew that. All right, so episode 35 begins with Winters giving Welsh some valuable information and ends with Spears giving Blythe sage advice. So this is an episode that is bookended by advice, which works well. So yesterday we ended things with Winters giving Welsh a little bit of information as to what's going on with the Germans. You know how they had secretly left. Today he gives him a little bit of a surprise and says, well, they regrouped south of the town. May have been on their way to a counterattack when we ran into them here. Strength unknown. You know, and we can hear in the background a little bit of gunfire. The two men flinch a little bit, trying to figure out, where it's coming from. But it is distant. You know, one of the scariest moments in my own personal life was, being woken up in the middle of the night when I was in the army. To hearing distant gunfire, because you wake up to something like that, you don't know how distant it really is and in what direction it's going.
Right.
I never found out, but but even after 33 years, I still recall that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's been ingrained in me. And then Winters continues and goes, well, they want the town back, and we're in their way. If they don't come before then, we're attacking at first light, 0530. Made me wonder a little bit. 5:30 sort of sounds a little too late, I guess you can say, when sunrise would be in France in June. You know, that's the thing. What do you think?
5:30 for as far north as France is, it's close-ish.
Okay, well, you're right. It is pretty close because... Okay, so Normandy in Normandy on, let's assume this is June 8th. It might be June 7th, but just to get a general idea of what time sunrise was. Sunrise on June 8th, 1944 in Normandy was 5:52 a.m. So I guess 22 minutes before sunrise, you will have enough light there. So, yeah.
Unless you had overcast sky conditions, which didn't they have for part of that day?
Well, I don't know if they had on June 8th. They had on June 6th. It was partially overcast. That I couldn't tell you. Like, I could check the weather if you want.
Well, we don't have to go that far, but, I mean...
Why not? When you have AI, at your fingertips, it's very simple to check these things. So the weather in Normandy on June 8th, 1944, was windy, cool, and generally unsettled. Conditions still were challenging with overcast skies and a continued risk of rain, which hampered ongoing operations. So there you go. I mean, we did see in yesterday's episode that there was a little bit of rain coming down on them. And just 10 days later, there was a huge storm that showed that landed there. You know, June 19th to the 22nd, there was a very, very heavy storm. You know, so I guess someone did their did the research here to make sure that it really was, first light happening 22 minutes before sunrise. That's fair. And also he's at 0530. It could be approximately. He's not going to say if it was at 5:32. He wouldn't say 0532. So.
And little inside joke between us, maybe it was a whole daylight savings time thing. They couldn't get their schedules straight, and they ended up being off by 28 minutes.
Yes, very good. That's a very possibility. Okay, so according to what I see here, that sometimes there is light before sunrise, around 30 minutes. So again, that still fits in within the confines of what they say here.
Okay.
It's interesting that they call it twilight. I always thought that twilight is between, it's like right before sunset. That's interesting that it's still
That's what I
referred
always
to.
thought too.
Yeah, it's still in it's interesting that it still is referred to as twilight.
Again, we've learned something today.
Yes, we have. There is a morning twilight and an evening twilight. I never knew that.
Again,
Yes, there's the.
learning more here by accident than other places by
That's
design.
true. That's true. Morning twilight. Wow. I mean, again, I'm sometimes up when there is what I now know is referred to as morning twilight. So that's interesting. That there's I would have thought it would have been some other type of name, but I never would have guessed that it would be called morning twilight. At this point, Welsh then says to him, "Well, I'll tell the men to fix bayonets." So making that comment basically means that we're going to be going to close combat. So get your men prepared. And this is also giving us a little bit of a foreshadowing of something that might be happening in a little while from now. Dealing with bayonets, maybe, could be. I don't know. We'll have to wait and find out, right?
Well, there's no such thing as a long-range bayonet, so you got that right.
That's true. True. At this point, Walshton looks at him and asks about his foot. And he goes, "How much of a not much of a limp?" And he goes, "I'll survive." He goes, "Well, how is it?" He goes, "Hurts." And then Welsh just smiles at him and goes, "War is hell," which is a great line for the way for him to mention this whole thing.
And it's another one of those things when I was talking earlier about, characters that got a backstory that, make you wanna learn more about what the deal is with them. And the way he says war is hell, there you
That's
go.
right.
It's just another ping.
That's true. Now, do you know who originated the phrase "war is hell"?
I do not. It must have happened in a movie made after 1980.
No, it happened a long time before that.
That doesn't
I'll give
surprise
you a
me.
hint. It happened during the lifetime of a famous person whose birthday was yesterday, February 12th. Do you know whose birthday was of February 12th? Famous person.
So we're talking about George Washington.
No, George Washington's birthday was the 22nd.
So we're talking about Abe
And yes, we
Lincoln.
are.
See, I can't keep them apart once we they used to be two separate holidays, and now we got ripped off with that one President's Day
Exactly.
thing. Okay, so within the lifetime of Abraham Lincoln, so this came from the Civil War.
Yes, it did. It's Sherman, William Tecumseh Sherman, who the original phrase was "War is cruelty, and you cannot refine it." And he said that during the Siege of Atlanta in 1864. And then later on in 1879, he was giving a speech at the Michigan Military Academy, and he basically was emphasizing war's brutality and said, "War is hell." Yeah, he said, "I've seen cities and homes in ashes. I've seen thousands of men lying on the ground. I tell you, war is hell." So, makes sense. I mean, we've all heard this word many, many, so the phrase many times. And then
Well,
the
and it just
South.
sounds like the thing that a guy that was burning Atlanta to the ground would say.
Why not? Well, I mean, what it does say here is that Sherman believed that the only way to achieve peace quickly was through decisive, ruthless action to break the enemy's will.
Yep.
But
he's not alone in that.
That's right. He underscored that this brutal necessity was inherently hellish, but not glorious. So, okay,
true.
That makes sense. And then the shot changes, and we see Talbert. First of all, we hear someone snoring, and then we see Talbert, and he's standing over this snoring man, who is, or I wouldn't even call him a man, the snoring soldier slash teenager, and he goes, Smith, wake up, come on, Smith, get up, it's your watch. And did you notice how he tries to wake him up?
It's a little something I had a little note here, he's tapping him on the helmet with a revolver.
That's correct. And for all of us that have seen this this miniseries, it's the revolver that that Talbert received from the chief of police of his hometown on right before D-Day. He took it with him. I mean, I don't know what else you would do with
it. Now, he's about to find out why this is a bad idea.
Well, again, we will. Let's put it this way. The miniseries doesn't explain it well enough, but the book does explain it. So I will read the excerpt from the book that will explain what really happened here. But we'll get there. We won't jump ahead of ourselves. We'll talk about the miniseries first. Then he goes, Smith, it's your watch. And we see Smith wake up, and he's very disoriented. And then he thinks he's being attacked by a German, and starts parring him with his gun bayonet, and ends up stabbing Talbert. And he goes, easy, Smith, mm-hmm. It's me, Talbert. He goes, Smith, what the hell are you doing? That's Talbert. And Smith is completely out of it here. And he goes, I didn't. God damn. And he goes, oh, gosh. And Talbert himself screams, medic. And Smith goes, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do it. He looked like a kraut. I didn't know it was him. You know, Doc Rowe shows up. And then Talbert goes, yeah, I can breathe. And Doc Rowe looks at him and goes, look at me. Can you breathe? Yeah, I can breathe. And he says, I'm going to put some sulfur on the wound. You'll be fine. And Talbert just starts crying out, making a lot of noise, which I don't blame
well,
him for that.
I mean, you get poked with a bayonet a couple of times, you're going to make noise.
Yes, that's true. So the two paragraphs in the book that describe this this event, it's Sergeant Talbert was up and down the line all night, shifting the men back and forth so they can catch a few minutes sleep. He had the riflemen fix their bayonets. It was a cool evening. Talbert picked up a German poncho and put it on. At 3 a.m., he prodded Private George Smith with his revolver to awaken him for duty. Smith was almost comatose. When he finally awakened, he saw in the pale moonlight this figure in a German poncho hovering over him and prodding him with a pistol. Smith jumped up with his rifle and fixed bayonet and began lunging at Talbert. Talbert tried to stop him, hollering, Smith, it's Tab, don't! But Smith kept thrusting until he succeeded in bayoneting Talbert in the chest. Fortunately, he missed the lungs and heart, but Talbert was out of action. He had to be dragged away and carried the 3 kilometers back to the aid station. So yeah, that's not good for Talbert.
No. But, tapping somebody on the head with a gun is not safe behavior.
Yes, yes. And we'll talk about it later, the fact that Talbert doesn't get a... Never got a Purple Heart for this injury,
yeah.
Because it wasn't inflicted by the enemy.
That's true.
Slight problem. So then we're back with Martin and Blythe in their foxhole, and Martin hears all this crying, goes, what the hell is that? Sounds like it's coming from 3rd Platoon. And then he says to Blythe, you want to get some sleep? And Blythe goes, I don't think I can. He goes, all right, then go take a look. So he goes, Sarge, and he just gets up and starts walking towards the area where he hears the sounds, and you can hear crying in the distance and groaning and things like that. And then Blythe hears a clicker and quickly has to try and get his own clicker out in order to respond. And then he hears the password flash, and he goes, thunder. And he notices that it's once again Lieutenant Spears. Spears is back. And Spear says to him, "Where are you going, private?" He goes to check out the noise, sir. Spear says, "I just came from there. Everything's under control." Now, do you think he really was there, or he's just bullshitting? To get him to go back to his post?
I don't know. I think either possibility is valid the way it's set up there. Yeah, whichever one you like.
Right. Okay. I seem to think that he just wants him to get back to his post. That's my interpretation.
That's the way it comes off.
You know, I don't know. Yeah. Then Blythe responds, "Yes, sir." And the two of them start walking a little bit back towards Blythe's foxhole. Mm-hmm. And Spears goes, "You got some nervous privates in your company." "We do, sir." "Yeah, we do. I can vouch for that." And then Spears goes, they just don't see how simple it is." "How simple what is, sir?" And they reach the foxhole, and we see that Martin is already fast asleep. The response is very simple from Spears. He goes, "Just do what you have to do." Now, Blythe says something really, really strange at this point. And he says to him, "Like you did on D-Day, sir?" And Spears looks at him, and doesn't really react. But it's as if he's jabbing him by saying this, that I've heard this, this story of what you've done. So is that the way you're supposed to respond? Is that why things are so simple? You just, just shoot up whoever's there or whatever the case may be. I don't know. It's something that we'll never know the true answer to, but I think that the reason, my personal opinion is the reason that Spears doesn't respond is that he wants this myth / legend to grow so that people will, I don't know if it's just fear him, but they will want to follow him because they know it's somebody who they can sort of
trust. And he's also borrowing a page from Patton in the scene in that movie where he says something to the effect of, "I don't care if they lose their fear of the Germans. I just pray to God they never lose their fear of me." And that's what he's doing. And that's also what, as you come out of this segment, I was referring to this as a horse race as to which guy do I want to know more about his backstory? Which guy is really piquing my curiosity the most? And they managed to get both of those guys just nose to nose by the end of this segment, because now I can't pick which one of those guys has more in his background that I want to know about. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Of course. Of course. And then Blythe continues talking to him, and he goes, "Lieutenant, sir, when I landed on D-Day, I found myself in a ditch all by myself. I fell asleep. I think it was those air sickness pills they gave us. When I woke up, I didn't really try to find my unit to fight. I just kind of stayed put." So it's very interesting that he's sort of admitting to someone like Spears that acted cowardly,
mm-hmm.
Which is not the type of response you'd think. If someone's going to start up a conversation with someone who is quote unquote a hero, so you're going to try and tell them your heroic things. You wouldn't say the story of your own cowardice. I find it strange that he chose to tell the story this way, but that's the way the writer decided to go. And then Spear says to him, "Well, what's your name, trooper?" He goes, "Blythe, sir. Albert Blythe." And then he says, "You know why you hid in that ditch, Blythe?" "I was scared." And then he goes, "We're all scared." And that is such a great line from Spears. Mm-hmm. Here you have someone who is potentially, someone who's the Superman, who's able to dodge bullets and is able to do whatever you need to do and runs into the fire instead of away from it and stuff like that. And he himself is saying, "We're all scared. I'm scared too. We're all in the same boat here."
Mm-hmm.
And then he continues and goes, "You hid in that ditch because you think there's still hope. But Blythe, the only hope you have here is to accept the fact that you're already dead. And the sooner you accept that, the sooner you'll be able to function as a soldier is supposed to function." So personally, I think this is an amazing pep talk for him to be giving him.
Yeah.
It really works well. And it's not just a pep talk that he's giving to Blythe. He's also giving that pep talk to us by telling us, okay, the only way that you can really function here is to just put everything aside.
Yeah, and I mean
And
you're dead on with the pep talk thing is the difference. And this would, again, you've kind of walked right into my sports analogy here, and that was you look at how we're
ouch.
framing the guys in this moment, you know, and there's a lot of nervous going back and forth between the other guys, and then all of a sudden you get to this scene where that was a locker room speech, you know. You have to just accept that you're already dead. And then when you do that, you will, you know, so many locker room speeches that I've heard in my life have that similar sort of theme or pattern. They might not be framed in terms of life or death, but they're, you know, as soon as you accept this is when you can achieve that. That's pretty, you know, I want to say standard stuff, but it is pretty standard stuff. And you're right when he's like, okay, this is the speech that he gives, you know, Blythe. And again, it goes back to the thing about, okay, now which guy do I think has more damages in his background? Is it the lieutenant who gives a speech about being already dead? Or is it Blythe who, didn't you get the feeling he really seems like he gets what the lieutenant is saying? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Okay.
Blythe is is I don't know if shell shocked is the right term at this point, because he hasn't really been in there too much, but he's definitely in a place where he doesn't know if he belongs or not, but he's still going to be there to do his duty as well as he can. And not overstep those bounds. Someone like Spears is going to overstep it and go above and beyond. Blythe, we already know based on what we've seen and also what he's talking about, he's not going to go above and beyond. But if he's in a position where he needs to do something, he's going to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
So I like the way that they present that.
Again, it goes back to the thing I've said all along. When you talk about the storytelling, and I say one of the things that keeps coming back is reliability. Or, you understand. We both picked up on the fact that what Spears was saying was a pep talk, you know. And so, you know, when you know, a couple of people could look at that and see right away what they're trying to do, and they're like, okay, that makes the story. I mean, I said reliability, I meant relatability. That kind of changes everything. Like, yeah, I said reliable. I have the wrong word there,
Relatable. Okay.
but the relatability. I mean, you understand the story. You kind of get the motivation why he's saying it. You want to know the damage in his life that makes him say that, and you want to know the damage that happened to Bly that makes him understand it.
Right. And again, they want us to feel what these characters are doing, which is a great way to tell this story.
Yeah, and it works, absolutely.
Spears continues with his analogy, and he basically says, without mercy, without compassion, without remorse, all war depends on it. And again, it truly is a great pep talk, because what Spears is basically saying here is that when you're in battle, you do whatever is needed, and don't think about any of the consequences on any on either side of you. You have to have a goal, you have to run for it and move on and go directly for that.
Get in, do the job, get out.
And
Yes.
yeah, exactly. And Spears, because everyone knows the stories that revolve around him, whether they're true or not, doesn't make a difference. As far as anyone's concerned here, including Blythe, this is someone who not only possibly massacred the prisoners, but he also took the 105 battery pretty much all by himself. So for him to say something like this, people might think that he's psychotic, that he's crazy, whatever it is, but he's not. He knows what needs to be done in the middle of a battle, in the middle of a war,
Well, but
and
see,
I'm gonna go do it.
this is where the mystery part comes in, because two things can be true. I mean, he can be the guy that needs to know what needs to be done in a battle, but he can also be psychotic. That's why you want to find out what happened to this guy.
Right, it's true, very true. I mean, Blythe is after this particular after part three, we never see Blythe ever again, But we're going to see Spears in just about every episode from here on all the way to, he's around. He's one of the focal characters, I guess. And as you said, they make this character so mysterious that we're very interested in trying to figure out what's going on. Who is this guy? And you see, I'm glad for someone like you who hasn't watched this series before. Just seeing these scenes with Spears makes you even more curious as to what's really going on with Spears.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you like you said, there's a horse race, but you find this out later on, because like you said, Blythe becomes a non-factor, but Spears, you're going to find out a lot about him.
Exactly. All right, is there anything else that you wanted to discuss about this segment?
I think we have hit everything I had on my notepad.
Excellent. See, it works well. So today's segment is Oh Brother, where my guests will give their top five movies that feature brothers.
Okay, well,
So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
number five, this is the solution to my problem when we talked about fictional bands, and I said I just put myself down to a point where I had to pick Spinal Tap or the Blues Brothers, and I picked Spinal Tap. Well, so that I don't get all the hate mail that I talked about in that episode, I'm gonna put at number five the Blues Brothers. All right. And
So low, so low.
okay, well, you'll see what's coming here. The next two on the list, three and four, you can flip them however many ways you like. I am mentioning them here from My Darling Clementine, but this is two sets of brothers that are in so many different westerns. How many different times have we remade Gunfight at the OK Corral? But like I said, your sets of brothers here, name them three or four however you like, the Earps and the Clantons.
Okay, and what is your favorite iteration of the story that is being told here?
I'm gonna go either My Darling Clementine or the 57 Kirk Douglas Burt Lancaster version.
Okay, fair enough.
I know there's a lot of people who love the 80s Tombstone version. It's okay, but
90s, 90s, 90s. It was after 1994, right? After 1980, so you're not
was it
aware of it.
90, 90, it's like 93, right?
It was 93, yes.
There's another.
Wyatt Earp was 94, and that was 93,
Okay, so
I
then
believe.
there's another one I keep getting at confused with, is Silverado. That's the 80s, right?
Oh yeah, Silverado, yeah.
Yeah, I keep
Which
getting.
also has a pair of brothers.
Yeah, see, again, I get those two confused. Okay, so we've done the Earps, we've done the Clantons. The number two on the list is going to be the Flynns from Sands of
Wait,
Iwo Jima.
one second before we get there. So you're saying three and four, one of them is My Darling Clementine, and one of them is Gunfight at the OK Corral?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't catch
Oh,
who
see,
that was
I
that way.
see here. I was talking about the sets of brothers, but you can use the movies for the list as well.
Yes. Okay. Now I understand. All right, now you can move up to your to number two.
Number two is the Flynns from Sands of Iwo Jima. If you've ever seen this movie, they are the two brothers in Sergeant Stryker's squad that keep trying to rip each other's heads off. And oddly enough, it's the whole brotherly love thing.
Yes, so the term brotherly love is it always reminds me of the movie The Frisco Kid, where he says, "And then I got to Philadelphia, the city where all the brothers love each other."
And then the number one set of brothers that I've got here, and again, I don't know how a list can be complete without these guys, but that would be the Hansen brothers from the hockey classic Slapshot.
Come on, those three guys.
Well, I
And why does
mean,
it not surprise me? Why does it not surprise me that you would have a sports related answer to this
well, that's kind of what I do,
Yes, I'm no. Well, that's what I said. I'm not.
But they're just, I mean, even if you don't like hockey, I mean, that's, you watch that movie, it's like those guys are I mean, they're the whole movie.
Hi, Saul. I should look forward to one day you doing minute by minute Slapshot. You could do it. You could do it.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I have the ambition to do, what's that about? 100, 110 minutes long? Because I'd have to do 110 episodes. Yeah. See,
Oh,
you're
come
far more
on.
dedicated than I
That's
am, sir.
nothing. Well, not the slapstick, but
I
not the slap shot. Sorry.
knew what you meant.
So you just gotta find something that you're a little more enthusiastic
Well, it's gonna have to, yeah, 110 episodes at least, yeah.
Okay, well, no, let's put it this way. Slapshot is 2 hours and 3 minutes, which means that it would be 123 episodes.
Okay, well, you're not strengthening your case there, but I see what you mean.
I'm not trying to. I'm being as honest as possible.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Why don't you try and strengthen my case? I have given you a proposal. You gave a counter proposal. I'm giving more information for you to be able to make that right decision that to start a Movies by Minute podcast.
Yep.
That's all it comes down to.
Well, and I mean,
So
if I were going to
I
do it, I
trust.
would be turning to you for advice anyway, given how many of them you've done. You're kind of the subject matter expert here.
I would gladly help you. No
Okay.
question about that. We just have to figure out the time zone difference, and then
Okay.
that's it.
Well, if you can
All
figure that
right.
out, we can
So
figure out anything.
exactly. So now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie.
Okay.
So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Round and round and round the wheel goes. What is J-Dub gonna get? Okay, you've got a movie from before 1980.
Okay.
So there you go. You're very good. This is a movie that came out in 1970, and it's all about the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Tora, Tora, Tora.
Exactly. See, someone seems to like you and Pearl Harbor. I don't know why.
Well, I am secretly Japanese. Don't tell anybody.
All right. I will not tell anybody.
That's
Well, you do have a Japanese sword, so it is possible.
a rifle, not a sword, but.
Sorry, that's right. I confused you with the main character in The Best Years of Our Lives. It shouldn't be too difficult to make that assumption.
Perfectly understandable.
Yeah, of course. All right. Is there anything else you want to say about this series, the story, something about Band of Brothers? Anything else
No,
you want to
I
mention?
again I we had a rich and diverse list of things that at least I had on my roster here, and we've gone through all those, and we've made it through not only three segments of this, but we've ended on Friday the 13th, and so far we have avoided complete catastrophe.
Well, we did get a bayonet attack, which could constitute a slasher episode here.
Well, and that's
It
just
is
coming
possible.
from the standpoint of content. I'm coming from, with the whole Friday the 13th angle you into. You've been making podcasts long enough that there's always some sort of technical glitch, or you thought you had your stuff recorded and it didn't get recorded, or God forbid later on you find out that the sound quality's terrible, or these are all things that we've so far avoided, and we should be happy and proud of that.
Right. Well, that I only know about in the during the process in the future.
Well,
So
those parts, yes, the parts we don't know about you yet, but I have positive vibes about that, so.
I'm very glad to hear that. That's very important.
Well, you can't say to a guy that's
Right.
gracious enough to have you on his effort and then, say, "Yeah, I hope everything doesn't work." I mean, it was, yeah, I spent 3 hours even talking about this stuff, but I hope we got absolutely nothing out of it. That doesn't seem like the right thing to
No, you could
say.
say it. It just means that you have to find, more time to re-record them. That's fine. I think that in and of itself is a scary enough prospect for you.
And I'm sure
So
you that there's been times, as many of these things that you've done, that you've had to do that.
I have had to do
Yeah.
that has happened, yes. During my first season, it happened 4 times. There was a period of 4 weeks where I was recording and didn't realize that I wasn't recording. No, because it only picked up my side and it didn't pick up the my guest side. And
No.
of those 4 weeks, one of them had a backup that I used in the end. Two of them I re-recorded the episodes with them, and then the fourth one couldn't schedule any time to re-record with me, and I had to find another guest for the for that episode. So for those 5 episodes. So yeah, it all works out. However you look at it.
Well, either way,
No complaints. No complaints on this side.
no, that, like I said, that just brings us basically to the end here, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does, unfortunately, you know. But you know, this way everyone can enjoy the rest of their Friday the 13th and have a nice Valentine's Day, or you know, tomorrow, where they don't have to listen to us talking about this. You know, so it makes.
We're almost like a public service that way.
Yeah, of course. So, John, would you like to for one last time? As of now, for this season, unless a slot opens up and I bring you back to watch more segments in the future.
It'd be like your
So,
emergency relief pitcher.
sure, why not?
No, okay. Well, if you're looking for me, you can find
Okay.
me at Dubsism.com, Dubsism. It's the most interesting independent sports blog on the web. You can send any hate mail or any questions at Dubsism@yahoo.com. I'm also Facebook, Instagram, X, the usual suspects, Dubsism. It's first page search result on Google.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie I'm In. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieimin.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieimin@movierob.net. So, John, thank you once again for joining me.
And thank you again. Thank you again for having me back.
Very enjoyable time the last few days talking to you about this, and I hope that you know our conversation has convinced you to try to find the time to actually sit and finish watching the rest of this miniseries that you haven't yet seen to see what
Oh
happens to your
yeah.
character.
What I did in part of it in preparation for this, because I didn't have time to watch all of it. So I looked at the three segments that you sent me, and then I just randomly picked other segments, and I changed the file name as I downloaded them from the folders you had them in, and I changed the file name so I didn't know what order they were in. And so I would watch them and try and guess, are they before the three that I watched or after? And you get some really funky things that you pick up on when you do that. That's why I kept talking about, oh man, I want to know more about this guy, and I want to know more about this guy. But you know, there was one scene later on with the lieutenant, and it was clear that Blythe wasn't around anymore. And I was like, okay, that had to be after, you know. So, just a long story short, I am curious about the rest of this series, and I will be going back to complete my education on it.
And then you can actually understand even better a lot of these episodes if you have time to listen to all the episodes of the season too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Exactly. So that would be great. Everyone have a great weekend. I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, Craig!
Great.